All right, guys. When I ended last week's episode, I had said that I hope to be able to return the following week under better circumstances and to not have a like a downer type of an episode the way that I did because of the very recent and devastating news about both Adam Raimi and the plane crash. And I do intend for us to have more fun with this episode, but it is very, very important to me that I do start off taking a bit of time to further go into the aforementioned plane crash, because the news of that came out like right as I was wrapping up the episode. So my statements about it that I edited in were very like on the spot and in shock, to say the least. And now that the details are out there entirely, I want to make sure that everybody who lost their lives in this horrific accident gets their flowers on my platform. But right before that, I do want to acknowledge a mistake that I made. And I don't know if anybody even caught it, but it bothered me, so I want to take accountability for it nonetheless. So like I said just now, the news of the plane crash broke just as I was finishing up the episode, and I don't know what it was, maybe like the state of shock or just not having it fully processed what happened, not to make any kind of excuses, but I still went ahead and promoted the episode on Twitter and Instagram, and in the caption I said that I was thinking about Dave and Daniel and anybody else who lost their lives, and that this was a profound tragedy that we as a scene were experiencing. It was well-intended, and I meant zero malice whatsoever, but after I posted that, I realized that, especially on the Twitter end of this, if somebody were to have searched Dave Shapiro and Daniel Williams' names, my tweet promoting my show comes up, and that felt very, like, gross and inappropriate, and I realized my mistake almost immediately, so I took the post down, and I never went back to promote the episodes, and instead just extended, condolences and well wishes to everybody affected by these events, because that's all that I should have been doing in the first place. And, you know, maybe it's not even a big deal, and maybe it wasn't even noticeable on the timeline, but like I said, it did make me feel a certain way, and for that, I wholeheartedly and sincerely apologize. Now, I want to talk a bit about the tragedy itself, and if anybody listening happens to be unaware, there was a private plane that crashed in a neighborhood in San Diego last Thursday, and it took the lives of everybody on board. One of the first names that was confirmed to have been killed was Dave Shapiro, and to put it into simple terms, this scene as we know it today and have known it for almost two decades now does not look the way it does or feel the way that it does without Dave's influence and his fingerprints all over it. I'm sure a lot of y'all saw on social media the amount of bands that had a story to tell about Dave and how he took a chance on them and ended up playing a massively instrumental part in their successes that followed. Like, it's genuinely a who's who of scene bands who Dave has had a hand in. He was the fucking just the best and the greatest executive and agent that I think has ever existed in our space. Some of the local concert promoters in Texas that I follow had some amazing stories to share about Dave, namely Mike Zimmer from Third String Productions out in the Dallas region. He went into great detail about his connection to Dave and how vital he was to his success, and it's a really, really beautiful post that I encourage everyone to go seek out on Mike's socials. And then Twin Productions, who promotes for San Antonio, which is the area that I am in, they said that Dave and Sound Talent Group always took great care of them and made sure prioritizing bringing tours to San Antonio. And, you know, that's just like one of the, you know, like a piece of the much larger set of flowers that Dave has been receiving ever since his death, because this really, really hit our community incredibly hard, and it's been a very heavy week under those circumstances, to say the least, you know. Another victim of the crash was Daniel Williams, who many know as the original drummer for The Devil Wears Prada. He was with the band from 2005 to 2016. So for a lot of us who existed in the Warped Tour and MySpace era of the scene, just to put it in a simplified manner, the Prada material that we became attached to initially, Daniel was on them. Like Plagues, Zombie, With Roots Above and Branches Below, the heartbeat of those records is Daniel's drumming. Being someone who was very interested in learning drums when I was a teenager on the internet, Daniel was somebody who I turned to and looked to as an influence because his approach and technical ability was just fucking outstanding, and that of a masterclass on every single release by The Devil Wears Prada. He had a huge impact on my upbringing in the scene, and I would imagine it was the case for so many others who, you know, are out there listening to this kind of music, given how influential Prada has been. Other victims on board included Kendall Fortner and Emma Hugh, who were employees of Sound Talent Group, Selena Marie-Rose Kenyon, who was a photographer, Dominic Damian Christopher, he was a jiu-jitsu instructor, and, you know, these were the occupations of these other individuals, but what I want to emphasize is that they were also loving people who had so much life ahead of them, and it was all cut short for reasons that, you know, nobody will ever be able to, like, articulate, because it makes no sense. It's so fucking unfair and just fucking heartbreaking to have something like this happen and, you know, then see the scene in mourning. There were several GoFundMe pages set up afterwards to assist with the funeral expenses for every victim, and then just, you know, ensuring that their families and loved ones are taken care of. I will include links to every single one of them in the description of the episode. So if any of you guys are at all able to help out in whatever way, it would be greatly appreciated by everybody affected coming out of this tragedy. Now, as for this episode, I am gonna do the normal intro very shortly and then go into all of the reviews for the week. What I will be doing at the very end of the episode, instead of playing the normal outro that I usually do, I will be playing in full Des Moines by The Devil Wears Prada. It's my favorite Prada song of all time, and I think it perfectly epitomizes the abilities of Daniel and how amazing he was and how much his style of play enhanced Devil Wears Prada songs. It has the right amount of beauty and aggression that I think is befitting of a tribute to Daniel, so if any of you guys want to, at the very end of the episode, please stick around to listen to Des Moines. And may we all never forget the lives and the names of Daniel Williams, Kendall Fortner, Emma Hayuk, Dominic Damian Christopher, Selena Marie Rose Kenyon, and Dave Shapiro. God rest y'all souls. Rest easy.
Ulterior.
For the regular, like, you know, sometimes comedy-based intro, what I want to talk about is vastly different from what I will be talking about, because what I was hoping to be able to talk to you guys about was saying that the Knicks are pulling off a comeback, and they're in the lead right now in the series against the Pacers, and all looks well for them. Go New York, go New York, go. No, bro, what the fuck happened? As of today, well, today is Thursday, May 29th. Yeah, 29. It is Game 5 of the Knicks and the Pacers. Eastern Conference Finals. And the Knicks are down 3-1. What are y'all doing? What the fuck happened? Are the Knicks going to be eliminated today? I would like to think not. Like, I really, really want to believe that the Knicks do not allow themselves to be slotted out to the Pacers this way and drop 3 in a row at home to them. Best case scenario, win today and then regroup afterwards before game 6 on Saturday and just figure out how bad you want to force a game seven. Other happenings in sports, the OKC Thunder just wrapped up the Western Conference Finals against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So next Thursday, OKC will be playing in the NBA Finals. Over in the NHL, Florida just defeated Carolina. So Florida will be going to the Stanley Cup Finals. On the other end of the bracket, Edmonton and Dallas are still going at it. I believe it's 3-1 now for Edmonton. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. And yeah, you know, next time I record an episode next week, we will know full well what the NBA Finals look like, what the Stanley Cup Finals look like, and we will go from there. I still have faith in the Knicks. By the way, I'm not even like really a Knicks fan. I think I said on this episode last week, I picked them as my team for the playoffs, and they've made it this far, and I was like, oh shit, it looks good, and then just kind of started going off a cliff, and they are getting their shit rocked by Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers, to say the very least. But like I said, we'll see what happens, and we'll go from there. Maybe it's good news, maybe it's bad news. It's probably bad news. But again, we'll see. This episode, the next half hour, 40 minutes, whatever it's going to take, what am I talking about? I will be going into detail on the brand new singles by the likes of Blind Equation, Jamie's Elsewhere, I Prevail, Honey Revenge. We'll see what else we get into. And then two brand new records that I really, really thoroughly fucking enjoyed, out of the camps of Senna and House of Protection. Thank you guys so much for tapping in, and I really hope y'all enjoyed this episode. You know, given how many times I actually dedicate intros of this show to sports or even pro wrestling, I might as well just like start my own platforms about those things. Should I or should I not? I've thought about it before. If anybody's hearing this and interested in me, like kind of, you know, talking more and more in other areas about sports or wrestling or whatever it might be, let me know. We'll see what happens. Maybe music is not my only outlet. I don't know. Anyways, first up is going to be the newest single by Blind Equation, and I'm going to mention why this is maybe the most shocking song of the year for myself so far. It is called Nothing. Let me be very candid, I guess, about Blind Equation and the genre of cybergrind altogether, because I don't know how much of it I've actually gone into in the past. I will say that 2 years ago, when Blind Equation were dropping some singles for the album Death Awaits, I did review some of the singles for social media, and I was not a fan. I like weird shit, I like quirky shit, I like that type of stuff, but there was just, like, something about the way that Blind Equation were doing this particular, like, very unorthodox style that I couldn't find any kind of, like, I guess connection to. There was nothing that they were doing that made me feel like it was, like, must see, must hear, anything like that, and so I just kind of wrote off Blind Equation and Cybergrind. I think what made me, I don't want to say like reconsider my stance on all this stuff, but I guess at least like made me wonder if maybe there's a lot more to it than I was giving any credit for, was when Omerta released Charade last year. And Omerta's probably not Cybergrind, but I think there is a lot of crossover between people who are into Cybergrind and then people who are into Omerta. So there's definitely common ground there in some way. And after that, I was like, okay, let's see like where these types of genres go from here on out, because maybe it's something that I can get into. And then so Blind Equation put out Nothing, which is the lead single for A Funeral in Purgatory, out on July 18th via Prosthetic Records. I went into the song with an open mind. Clean slate type shit, clean bill, and I was like, all right, let's see what Blind Equation is doing. Let's see how this band sounds in 2025 and what kinds of strides, if any, can be made ahead of this album. And then I listened to Nothing, and it was the most shocked that I have been by a song so far this year, because I didn't expect to love it. I thought, okay, maybe I can like it, and I hope to like it. I fucking adore this song. I think it's the like right kind of chaos and pandemonium that I would expect out of Blind Equation. It feels very like controlled, for lack of a better way of expressing it, this time around, as opposed to anything in the past by the band that, you know, pushed me away from them. Nothing just feels like this. It's like this abundance of calamity that is still able to be captivating to my ears and just make me like so invested in what the band is doing. And I think one of the best aspects of there being a new album on the horizon by Blind Equation is that I know for a fact that this single right here, Nothing, it like barely lets you have any insight into what the rest of the record will sound like, because there is no way to like have in your head a roadmap of what Blind Equation is going to sound like on an album. I have no fucking clue what the rest of the album will sound like, but if the quality of it is at least comparable to what I heard on this single, Nothing, A Funeral in Purgatory could be one of the best records of the year. I dead ass believe that. Alright, next single up. First time mentioning this band in a minute. I want to say it's going to be 2 years now since we have spoken about Jamie's Elsewhere. But we have that opportunity now because of their brand new single, Traveler. So this is actually part of a brand new EP by Jamie's Elsewhere called Alchemical. It's releasing on June 20th, so like less than a month away, just a couple weeks actually. Exciting times for Jamie's Elsewhere, exciting times for Aaron Polly, who is the vocalist of the band. And I say him specifically because he is also the vocalist for Of Mice and Men, and they had a single a couple weeks ago called Another Miracle. I like that song, but I would say that I love Traveler. And there's just something about like this specific approach to Jamie's Elsewhere that feels like it allows sort of a, I guess like a culmination in a way of Aaron's musical journey since 2010, which is when they said a storm was coming released. And he's just like, you know, spent these last 15 years really coming into his own as a vocalist, as a frontman, and becoming super comfortable. And I think Traveler is the kind of a song where you can really tell exactly just how comfortable he's been able to grow into it and become, you know what I mean? I think Traveler is just very catchy. It feels aggressive. I think some of the production elements feel like a little bit raw, and I strangely think that works to the advantage of Traveler, especially when you look at the artwork for Alchemical, which is fucking sick, by the way. That itself gives off this sense of like incompletion. And I think the production on Traveler having that, maybe inadvertently, but it really does like fit into the whole package and the presentation of what Alchemical was meant to be. Traveler to me is a dub of the song, home run, and I'm very excited for what is to come out of Jamie's Elsewhere. And I just went kind of on and on about Aaron Polly becoming, you know, his own as a vocalist the last couple of years. We will need to see that out of Eric from I Prevail, because there is a new image for this band, a new iteration, new era in so many ways. One of those ways is because of the brand new single by the band called Violent Nature. And the reason why I say all that about the band having like a new image and a new identity is because we learned a couple weeks ago now, it might have been like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even a little bit longer than that, Brian departed from the band. The only real explanation given was that it was, you know, due to maybe some concerns with his health and like well-being and stuff like that, which, you know, in that case, all of the best wishes to Brian. Nothing but love for that dude. I saw I Prevail live in 2022 when they headlined, you know, that tour where Pierce the Veil was coming back, and they were just fucking tremendous. Brian and Eric had some of the best chemistry that I've ever seen between two guys sharing vocal duties in a band. And then now Eric is the sole vocalist, or he appears to be, which is... It's going to be a change because Brian, I think Brian is like the main voice that people like really resonate with and connect with, because Eric was the screamer for the band, and then Brian's the one who was, you know, laying down the hooks on songs like Hurricane and Bow Down and Scars. But I will say that with Violent Nature, this is the exact kind of a song that I Prevail needed to lay out as like a first mission statement for the band in this new iteration. Eric sounds fucking possessed in this song, and it's just like a straightforward, blistering anthem that I think really does reestablish I Prevail as this very dominant and like, you know, I guess like statement-making metalcore band. It really does have that effect. I feel like if I have to make a comparison from this song to another, I'm looking at Cellar Door by Spirit Box, and the way that that song kind of embodies like just pure venom and aggression, I think that's what Violent Nature has going for it. Are some of the lyric sequences like kind of cringe? Yeah, sure, whatever, but metalcore is cringe altogether if you really think about it. I think Violent Nature is a tremendous song, and I genuinely do look forward to what is going to come next out of the camp of I Prevail. And again, all the best wishes to Brian, and subsequently all the best wishes to I Prevail in their own endeavors. And I think they're going to be just fine based off of Violent Nature. On the subject of another band whose material I haven't been able to speak about in a while, Honey Revenge. They came out just fucking guns blazing, brand new song. It is called Risk. So I do want to say that this is the first time that I've mentioned Honey Revenge since the 2023 year-end episodes, where I said Retrovision was one of the most celebrated releases of that year, and I had Seeing Negative Disappointment as, I believe, my fifth overall song. And I say my first time since then because I can't remember if I spoke extensively about the deluxe tracks from Retrovision that came out in 2024. So we pick up now off of Risk, and I love what this song has going for it. I think it keeps the core elements of Honey Revenge like really thriving while channeling the song through what I would call like a vintage type of a filter. It has like more of an age pop rock sound going for it, but like I said, kind of infused with a lot of what it is about Honey Revenge that I found to be like really alluring and exciting off of Retrovision. I think Devin sounds fucking tremendous in this song. She's a star in every facet of that. Risk is really like a great step forward for a band who I thought was already, you know, doing really well for themselves, and whatever it is that comes out next for Honey Revenge, I will be right there waiting to hear it and embrace it and celebrate it. The final single for the episode that I want to go into detail on, it comes from Neck Deep. It is called You Should See Me Now. Truly truthfully, this might be a little bit of a weird one for me to review because the last time that I talked about Neck Deep was at the beginning of 2024 when I reviewed their self-titled album, and not really just like reviewed it, but I was pretty down about it, to be honest with you guys. I feel like I tore that record apart. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm like, you know, exaggerating it in memory and in hindsight, but I just remember being like immensely disappointed with that album because I just couldn't connect with it. I thought it was like a little bit of a generic turn for Neck Deep, especially coming off of All Distortions Are Intentional, which I actually like really, really fucking loved. And I say that this is a weird review because You Should See Me Now doesn't really do anything inherently different from the self-titled album. It's still like a very, you know, pop punk song at its core with all of the traditional Neck Deep intangibles in there. But there's something about You Should See Me Now that I think makes it to where this song works like tenfold in comparison to what they were doing on self-titled. I think You Should See Me Now is just really like catchy and adorable in a lot of ways. It feels like more closely resembling what it is about Neck Deep that made me, you know, really interested and excited about this band to begin with. But again, while not even being that different from this other body of work of theirs that I didn't like. So it's a very curious, you know, a curious release for Neck Deep. And I am very eager to see where they go from here because it could be up, it could be down. I'm not sure what the trajectory is for this band right now, but at the very least, You Should See Me Now is a wonderful song that I am very happy to have. These were the remaining singles from last week that I gave either a 4 or a 5-2 in the reviews on social media. Dealers of Doom by Accuse, Bitter by Caution Thieves, Deny Me by Cryblood, Make Me Disappear by Dark Divine, Reverie by Electric Callboy, Gaia Wept by For Your Health, Pure Adrenaline by Foxlake, Left for the Crows by Foxblood, Salt the Wound by Malevolence, Vertigo by Marathon Men, All is Rust by Melancholia, Bittersweet by Pink Noise, Blueprints for Idol Genocide by Psychoframe, Evil by Royal Lynn, Rosary by Stateside, Amber by The Fallen Prodigy, Look Out for Me by Turnstile, No Rest for the Dreamer by We Came as Romans, Devil in My Mind by Woe Is Me, and Tarnished by You Fountain. So there was actually no single from last week that I went below a 4 on. That might be the first time all year that's happened, at least in my memory and what I can recall. So good shit all around. This was a tremendous and stellar week for releases, and we are not done yet because we have 2 records to get through. And like I said at the top of the music portion of the episode, these are 2 records that I am very, very high on, and I have a lot of compliments to give out, we'll put it that way. The first up is the debut full length by Senna. It is Stranger to Love. It's going down and it hits me. I'm looking for a chance to take me back. It's going down. Give me all you have that I want so bad. Give me all you have that I want so bad. So bad. So bad. The first Senna album is a really big deal to me because I remember finding out about this band in 2021, like pretty shortly after starting Ulterior. I know it was like a summer thing, and Ulterior began in the spring of that year. And so they were one of those discoveries that managed to just stick with me because when I was trying to find my footing with podcasting and reviewing, I would try to listen to just about like everything that I came across, and admittedly, some of the acts did not end up panning out for myself the way that I wanted them to, but Senna did, and I stayed locked in for them all the way through the 2022 EP A Moment of Quiet, which was one of my favorite records of that year, and at large, it's probably one of my most revisited EPs of the decade so far, not just because I liked it so much, but also for a while, that was kind of all that I had for Senna. Nothing else surfaced as far as new material goes for the band up until November of 2024, so just a couple months ago now, when Rain dropped. And it was great to get to hear Senna again, And I'll say this, they sounded not just like they had not lost a step in the 2 years that had passed since A Moment of Quiet, but it also felt to me like they leveled up in that time span. Rain had this crazy level of infectiousness and ambition and bounce to its rhythm that if I had to make a comparison for you guys who maybe have not heard Senna before, I would say that song gave off similar vibes to that of The Home Team and Don Broco. The singles rollout thereafter followed a similar suit and pattern with Blackout and Drunk Dial Anthem fitting into, you know, that R&B driven style. And then songs like High Note and Hurricane, that's where you start to hear a little bit of the aggressive side of Senna. But when I say aggressive, I don't mean like distant from everything else I've been talking about when it comes to like the pop inspiration of this band. They're that kind of band where they can take these different sectors of the scene and morph them together. They don't have to be like just heavy for one song and then, you know, kind of pop bass for another. They know how to find the right balance between all of those ideas for a single song. And I think that is like the crux of what this album is built on and why Stranger to Love works so well in every single effort that it decides to dive into. There's a song on the album called Bodyguard that it doesn't just kind of, you know, factor in everything that I've been saying so far about the sound of Senna, but the way that it opens instrumentally, it reminds me a lot of Polyphia on the album Renaissance. And any single time that I get to kind of make that comparison or draw that comparison for myself, I will do so, because that is a very specific type of guitar tone that is always just going to like really speak to my heart and my soul. And the past few times that I've been able to listen to Bodyguard over this past week, that song just like it wraps itself around me, like it becomes a part of me. And I think Bodyguard like really stands out for those reasons. And for that song to come, you know, right before Drunk Dial Anthem, I think it being able to kind of stand on its own and be this juggernaut, that is very impressive to me. Because as it stands right now, Drunk Dial Anthem very well could be my favorite song on the record, and maybe my favorite song ever by Senna. I'd have to really think about it, because it's not just this album, but also take a song like Jade off of A Moment of Quiet. Like, Senna has some fucking heaters in their library. But when I think of Drunk Dial Anthem, it's like one of those stars aligning moments where every single part of this band that makes them so unique and special and vital to the development of R&B driven post-hardcore music, whatever you want to call this shit, Drunk Dial Anthem feels like the pinnacle of a lot of that. And then another part of the album that I really want to kind of shine its own spotlight on and make sure that I make complete mention of is the back-to-back stretch of Breeze and Cliffhanger. I had said earlier that something that Senna does really, really extraordinarily well is be able to have songs be both heavy and like popish and not be so distinct in each song. I think Breeze and Cliffhanger are some of the best examples of that. Breeze has like this really like groovy fucking rhythm to it that just like kind of inspires like dance movement. And then right afterwards, Cliffhanger does kind of the same thing, but it feels like more raw. It feels like not just heavier, but maybe like, I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain it, because I feel like I'm still like a little bit flabbergasted in some ways by this album's delivery. Not that I wasn't expecting it, but like it's very rewarding, you know, to believe in a band and ride for a band this way while they're still in kind of their infancy stage as far as like having material available, and then they deliver to this extent, and it feels so, again, rewarding and satisfying. Back to what I was saying about Cliffhanger, it just feels like massive in so many ways, and I think that's kind of a wider aspect that I can apply to the rest of the record. Because it feels larger than life in a lot of ways. It feels like Senna, they've already found their identity and who it is they want to be, what kind of sonic shifts that they want to be making and, you know, sending out to the masses. they feel like such a complete band, despite, you know, not having a ton of material to their name. Like, this is the first fucking full length by this band, and I have seen some bands, like, be 5, 6, 7 albums deep and struggle to have the level of quality and consistency that Senna have found already on their debut full-length album. Stranger to Love is a fucking accomplishment, not just for Senna, but for this specific style of, like, R&B-driven post-hardcore that is always so hard for me to, like, put a label on, because I feel like so many bands do it in their own ways and they do it differently, and this specific way that Senna has done it on Stranger to Love, it might be the ultimate form of that. I really, really strongly believe that statement. The second and final record for the episode that I want to make mention of and gush over and all that good shit, it comes from House of Protection. It is their new EP, Outrun You All. You know, it's like actually pretty crazy to think about how the release of Outrun You All coincides almost with the 1 year mark of everybody discovering and finding out what exactly is House of Protection, because when this band just like kind of came to the forefront of the scene with the single It's Supposed to Hurt last year, I really believe that House of Protection just like kind of took the steering wheel per se and just fucking took themselves and took all of their ideas to these new heights that are only accentuated by the production of Jordan Fish. And that like kind of superpower unit that I spoke about last year, I think that's what really made it to where House of Protection became like this really undeniable juggernaut for myself. And like, just look at where I ranked this band for year-end stuff. Galore wasn't just one of my favorite EPs of the year, but like a top 10 record altogether. There were multiple songs from that EP that made it into top 100. I think fucking It's Supposed to Hurt and Pulling Teeth, Fuse, I want to say those were all of the representatives for that list. And those are all still songs that I return to like fucking weekly at this point. Galore is one of the best EPs that I've ever reviewed on Ulterior. And now, can I extend that same branch over to Outrun You All? Yes, just maybe not as definitively or decisively as I could with Galore. And I think that's why the score is what it's at. I give it a 9 on social media, whereas Galore got a 10. And just putting it next to Galore, it's not better than it, and I think that's where my mind is kind of settling at right now. But I say all that to say that even if it's not, you know, up to those standards, Outrun You All is still at a level and a standard above the fucking vast majority of the contemporaries for House of Protection. So, like, you have Afterlife as the first proper bit of music that you hear on the EP when you press play on it. And I don't think I got to speak about this when it released as a single because I wasn't consistent with the podcast at that point earlier this year. So I get to say this now. Afterlife just, like, packs this fucking punch to it that feels, like, very, like, like, if I close my eyes and I imagine the setting that Afterlife exists in, it's, like, industrial and there's, like, a bunch of, like beaming lights around me. I'm, like, talking in fucking circles now, but my point is that Afterlife creates this picture in my mind of, like, Armageddon in a way. I think it has one of the best courses of the year so far, and it really does, like, set the stage for what Outrun You All is going to be. Fire was the next single after that, and again, didn't get to talk about it on the show, and if I had reviewed Fire right after I heard it, I would have said, like, yeah, it's cool, it's a good song. The way that I've been able to grow with Fire these last couple months, and then now especially getting to hear it on the complete package that is Outrun You All, Fire is like one of the most anthemic songs of the year. I really do believe that. I think Fire just creates this like a party environment and an atmosphere that is incomparable in some ways to everything else around it. Fire just feels like a big ass, good ass time, really. I Need More Than This feels like so rhythmically inspired, and like one of those songs where you listen to it and you feel like everybody who had any part in this song in the studio was just like so locked in for that session. I feel like I can just imagine like kind of moving down this like cybernetic cyberpunk type of an alleyway with this song playing and these fucking like motorcycles, you know, speeding on my left and my right. I'm like painting these pictures right now because I feel like that's kind of what House of Protection really like brings out of me and brings out of my imagination, where I'm not just trying to like tell you guys how these songs sound. I'm trying to paint to you guys what they look like. And that's something that I can't do with a lot of bands, but House of Protection, and maybe it's, you know, a testament to, or not maybe, I know it is a testament to the production of Jordan Fish to make everything feel so atmospheric and like out of this world. House of Protection really commands that kind of attention from myself, and Outrun You All is a clear example of why. Phasing Out feels like the drum and bass inspired song for the EP, and Galore had something similar with Being One, but I think there's a little bit more attitude in what Phasing Out is doing that might make me like put it at least a little bit of a step ahead of Being One. If I have to draw comparisons and parallels between the two tracks, I think Phasing Out just like really feels like this this exciting journey as we near the end of Outrun You All, and then Slide Away being the closer. Tremendous. Like, I think with this song there's almost like a bit of a like a 90s alt rock feel to just the way that it's produced, the way that it moves along, the exact voice that Steven kind of gives off in it. I think Slide Away, it feels a little bit distinct from everything else House of Protection have been doing. But on top of that, I think that it is another layer to this band. And coming out of Outrun You All, my main like thought process when it comes to House of Protection is that they have already, in my head, excelled at two EPs in a row now. I don't know if the next logical step is a full length, or if this is one of those cases of like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And if the formula of EP after EP after EP is going to work for House of Protection, then, you know, who am I to say that they have to take a certain step moving forward now? But regardless of what the future for House of Protection is, I think in the present moment, they still reign supreme in my mind as one of the best bands that we have today, one of the fastest rising, one of the biggest ascents over last year, and the consistency in their material is really going to be what helps them flourish and stand out, and there is no reason whatsoever for myself to ever deny the viability of House of Protection being kind of like one of the foundations of what we're building right now as a scene. And that's it. That was every album, EP, single from last week for me to review and get through. Like I said at the beginning of the episode when I spoke about the tragedy from last week, this episode will be closing with Des Moines by The Devil Wears Prada playing in full. If you guys, you know, you've heard the episode up to this point and you feel like you've gotten what you need to out of it and you want to exit out, that's fine. Do what you gotta do. If anybody wants to stick around and listen to this song, I would highly, highly encourage it. Whether you've heard Des Moines before or you never have, like I said earlier, I think this is the exact kind of song that is the proper tribute to Daniel Williams. So that's what's going to happen now. I'm going to get out of here. Des Moines is about to play in a couple seconds. Thank you guys so much for listening to the episode, and I will talk to you guys when I talk to y'all. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Now's the time for blood!